The Springboks are off to a winning start in 2025. And in this episode, you are going to get a front row seat to how the Boks battered a bad Barbarians bunch. I don't think we'd call it vintage South Africa, but it was good enough in almost every area. And quite frankly, I don't see any concerning areas either. But we'll discuss that as this episode goes along. As early as the second minute, we saw scrum dominance, and 4 minutes later, we won a line-out and mauled our way over for the first try of the match, courtesy of Malcolm Marks. That is something that we are just so good at. Cheslin Kolbe then scored a beautiful try in the 10th minute. We again saw scrum dominance, this time on the near side, before passing the ball down to the far side, and from a breakdown, Morne van den Berg passed to Apelele Fassi, who put in a clever little kick, and Kolbe hairs past Melvin Jaminé to score. Fassi's kicking had been a feature of the performance at that point, even though we were only about 10 minutes in. But you could see that that was something that we were doing, that was something that he was doing, and off both feet, no less. New boy Vincent Chituka scored in the 22nd minute. Again, a maul from a line-out, although this time we weren't quite able to get over the line. But a few phases later, Chituka forced his way over, and it was 19-0 after 22 minutes. Now, the Barbarians got a little better after that, but this was always the concern. It was to be expected from a team of good players, but good players who have never played together before. And quite frankly, they appeared, at least to me, to have been put together in chaotic fashion. Remember, as late as Monday, they hadn't even all arrived in South Africa yet. Not to mention the fact that their actual squad hadn't even been announced. Weeks ago, Peter Omani, Connor Murray, I think Shannon Frizzell, there were one or two others, had been confirmed. Kian Healy, I think, was one of them, that had been confirmed. And then it was just silence from the Barbars, and it was like, wait, we're 5 or 6 days away from the match, and we don't even know if you have a contingent of players or a sufficient number of players yet. There's something very, very odd about all of that, and that's why I say I felt like it was put together in chaotic fashion. Anyway, just before halftime, I want to talk about this. Jean-Luc Dupriez went off for an HIA. If you're new to rugby, that's a head injury assessment. The TV replay clearly shows the collision was head on head with Luit de Jager. I actually cringed when I saw the TV replay, like as in I could feel that thud myself. But what I want to know is how on earth does Dupriez have to leave the field for an HIA, but not Luit? Surely de Jager's head suffered as much of a blow as Dupriez did, at least to the eye. Now, sure, he might not have suffered concussion, but given how cautious World Rugby are on this matter right now, it just smacks of inconsistency. You cannot tell me that Luit could not have suffered a concussion as a result of that hit, and yet Dupriez could have. Therefore, Dupriez needs to go for an HIA, but Luit can stay on the field, no problem. That collision was thunderous. And because you don't know, you take both men off the field to go for an HIA. That's the whole point of the HIA. Or am I wrong? Anyway, World Rugby is at the wheel, guys. 5 minutes into the second half, the bomb squad all came on at the same time. Oh, it was beautiful. All 8 of them at once. Stephen Jones, no doubt, suffered heart palpitations at that point. And what might Matt Williams have said? Imagine the horror when they saw Andre Esterhazen at open side flank. Esterhazen then popped up in the back line not long after that, like as in less than a minute later. So at one moment, he was on the far side of the field at open side, and less than a minute later, he was in the back line on the near side. Oh, it was beautiful. I loved it. And it makes sense when you factor in his wrecking ball style and strength as a 12. Provided that strength translates into scrummaging, then I'm all for it. Not forgetting that now, effectively, in attack, you've got 8, because while he might be used in the scrums and lineouts, He's also a natural center. And now you have Jesse Creel as well as Damian Dialende and Esther Hazen on the field at the same time. Two centers who specialize in taking the ball into the collisions and gaining meters. Just like a solid loose forward, come to think of it. Funny that. So in a way, you have 15 players on the field, but at the same time, you have 8 forwards and 8 backs. That's right, guys. In the Dr. Rassie Erasmus era, 8 plus 8 equals 15. And just one other thing that I want to say about that. Rassie Erasmus actually confirmed in the news conference after the match that Andre had been working with Don Himan and Tony Brown to actually quote-unquote become a forward and be used in the scrums in the last 5 months. So it wasn't something that they dreamt up in the week leading up. This is something that had been coming since January, and it's great to have seen it. I wonder how much more we'll see of Andre Esterhazen playing in that hybrid role. Anyway, a minute later, Jan-Hendrik Wessels crashed over. Wessels came on as a hooker. Remember, he can also play as a loose head. And his versatility is something that I think ensures he goes to Australia in 2027, provided he stays injury-free, of course. Jan-Hendrik Wessels next up for the Springbok. Kurt Lee Arendse then chased after a Dialende kick ahead in the 58th minute to go over. Because there's more to Damien's game than just wrecking ball carries, of course. And with 20 minutes left on the clock, Colby managed to break through, and it wasn't long before the Barbar's defense was again breached. De Jager was the man to go over this time.
He's been flattened by Evans. What a tackle that was. Springboks remain on the front foot here. Can they capitalize? Quagga Smith weighs up his options. Yep. Goes for the line himself. Smith stops short. Reinach pops it away.
Now the Barbarians are known for their running rugby and attacking principles. Eventually, they did score a try. It took until the 65th minute, though, for Jaminé to score for them. And it was only thanks to a missed tackle by Kurt Lee Arendse, of all people. Jaminé then converted his own try. Chituka was next over the try line, right under the poles for South Africa. Again, good running and good quick work at the breakdown. But this try also came because of a mistake by the officials. The ball had been kicked out by the Barbars, but it was missed. And so instead of play taking place in our 22, we were soon in their 22. And just to be clear, that ball that went out, the TMO actually checked it for a late tackle. So he checked for the late tackle, satisfied that it wasn't a late tackle, but missed the fact that the ball was actually out of play. I don't know how you miss that, guys. And I'm not big on criticizing referees, except for Bryce Lawrence in 2011, which was absolutely disgraceful. But I generally feel that because the laws are so complicated, refereeing is effectively an impossible task in a rugby match, and it's certainly a thankless task. And certainly if you go all the way down the levels to things like schoolboy rugby, the abuse that referees suffer from parents and friends of the schoolboys, I just think it's disgraceful. And that's why I feel that unless it's an absolute howler, I just keep quiet. I accept that referees are going to miss things. And generally speaking, most referees at international level anyway, they come out at spotting about 80% of what's going on. And when I say going on, I'm talking about scrum time, breakdown time, those sorts of things, right? As long as they get 80% of it right, which I feel is sort of the ballpark number, then that's what we have to live with. That's how I see it anyway. Anyway, the fact of the matter is that as much as that was a shocker, it didn't affect the outcome of the match, but still. And then, right at the end, we were the ones who were playing barbarian rugby despite the weather conditions. The Barbars were trying to run it. But we stole the ball and went on an attack of our own, which was eventually finished by Dialende. What a game he was having. Final score, 54-7 to the world champions. Now look, I thought the Barbars were poor, very poor. Their best player was Peter Omani, easily. And it's worth also saying that Dave Ribbons had a very good outing. But you're not going to win a match when two players are doing everything they can do to help the team, but it's not part of any kind of cohesive strategy. And that's what it came across as, which is unsurprising because, again, Monday night, most of them hadn't even arrived in the country yet. We didn't even know what their squad was going to look like. Sadly, because of the weather, we were also denied the festival of rugby that the Barbars are known for. There was nothing from them in terms of attacking, enterprising rugby and innovation. Maybe the odd offload here and there, but for me that's not enough. Now yes, you could say the weather made it difficult, but this is also what happens when you put a team together at the 11th hour. And quite frankly, this is not a good advert for probably the most famous rugby club in the world. I really genuinely hope it doesn't happen again. But putting together a team less than 5 days before a match against the world champions is not something that I think anyone wants to see. And so 54-7 should therefore not come as a surprise to anyone. My score prediction of 40-21, as it turns out, was wholly conservative. Overall, I would give the Springboks 7 out of 10. I think it's difficult to judge when you're coming up against a team that has virtually no cohesion. And we didn't really do anything wrong, and the conditions didn't help us either. I saw a lot of attacking kicks, grubbers, chips, etc. Now, it's not unique. Other teams do it too. But it's clearly the fashionable thing in rugby right now as teams look to open up space in what comes across as almost chaotic and unstructured fashion. Think of those quick little offloads, the one-handed offloads, the little flick offloads. We're seeing more and more of that to the point where it's no longer something that we look at in awe, but it's actually something that we have now come to expect because almost everyone can do it now. So naturally, we're going to be doing those things too, but whatever it is that we do, it still seems to be the kind of thing that everyone else is doing, but we're also doing it. And the fact of the matter is that whatever we do and however we do it, we need to be doing it well. I also want to just address the empty seats. Now, yes, the weather was awful. And so you can say there would have been folks with tickets who just looked at the heavy rain a few hours before kickoff and decided not to go. I mean, with all due respect, it's the Barbarians, not the All Blacks. But it also calls into question the pricing of the tickets. Fans have complained about the ticket prices, and while SARU have a responsibility to maximize the Springboks' revenue, there is a fine line between that and pricing loyal supporters out of being able to attend games. Having said that, I'll wait to see the attendances at the Italy and Georgia tests before saying anything more. And finally, I was going to make Luit de Jager my man of the match. It was great to see him back after nearly 2 years away. Luit is still our best five, in my opinion. And here he demonstrated his line-out dominance, strong scrummaging, ability to steal line-out ball, and also had a couple of strong carries. And as I've also told you guys before, my man of the match is almost always a forward. But on this occasion, I cannot deny it to a back. Cheslin Kolbe was unplayable at the Cape Town Stadium. He demonstrated everything that is special about him. Kolbe scored a couple of tries, had some really good runs, was solid in defense when he needed to be, and showed off his world-famous sidestep here and there too. Always looking dangerous.
Cheslin Kolbe stretches it out of the sky. He's got support galore. He might not need it. Inside it goes to Reinachor. He's been flattened by Ribbons. What a tackle that was.
And so it's off to Loftus for the first test of the season next week against Italy. I can't wait. A real test against a real team.
Reinachor popped it away.
But what do you think? Do you think we got some value out of this match, considering that Doc treated it as a test and everyone contributed effectively? Or do you think the Barbars' late arrival and squad announcement and subsequent below par showing was nothing but an insult to the world champions and we got nothing from this fixture? Let me know in the comment section down below. And while you're down there, may I also encourage you to sign up on my Patreon page. I would love to do this full time, guys, and go to Australia and cover the Rugby World Cup in 2027 for you from down under with daily coverage. If you sign up, you can get your name mentioned in my videos. You can get discounts on my soon to be launched merchandise store. You can stand a chance to win the new Springbok jersey released earlier this week. And you can also stand a chance to win the soon to be released James Small biography. You might also be able to have quarterly Zoom calls with me where we discuss Springbok players, matches and tactics, and you might even be able to get me to write an ebook for you on your favorite player. It starts from as little as $5. Yeah, that's US, not Zim dollars. And if that sounds like something you want to be a part of, then head on over to my Patreon page and sign up right now. And I'll see you next time.